Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler, and today we are talking about procrastination. I know for me, this is a biggie, so I'm really excited. And on episode 21, we had an incredible interview with our guest today, Leslie Josel, about teen time management and the foundational issues that actually can create a ton and host of problems in our relationship with our kids. It might be late assignments, to forgetting things, and just getting to be late. And one of those issues that we were chomping at the bit to dive into but ran out of time was procrastination.
Oh my gosh, yes. We're at the end of the show going, we want to do this so badly, but you know, the interview was such an eye-opening interview, and I've been incorporating what I learned from Leslie, and it's really been interesting to see how that's impacting my family, my kids, well, more so one of my daughters and my husband, and my relationship with them. But I have also been really looking forward to expanding and getting into this procrastination because, you know, this is such a universal issue for kids, for adults alike. And so I can't wait to hear what Leslie has to say to us on this topic. But just to let everybody know who Leslie is, Leslie Josel is an academic and life coach, an award-winning author, and internationally acclaimed speaker whose business, Order Out of Chaos, was born out of her personal experience and a personal mission. She had a teenage son who was diagnosed with ADHD, and she needed to create order in his world and for their family. When she set that up so it worked amazingly well, other people, of course, started asking her to help their families, and so she did. And now she is a respected resource on ADHD and executive functioning in students. She writes a weekly column for Attitude, ADDitude magazine, and is a contributing writer for Family Circle magazine. She wrote the book, Teens in Time Management. She created a student planner specifically for organizationally challenged teens, and she has so many resources for families. Leslie, we are thrilled that you are joining us here again on Mighty Parenting.
Oh, I love you ladies. I love what you're about. So thank you. I am honored to be back.
Great. Well, Leslie, in our last interview, we learned that you are the fountain of information. So I really want to just kick it off with having you tell us what is the most important thing that we need to understand about procrastination in general.
Okay. What I think we all have to realize about procrastination is two things. Number one, it happens to all of us. So it's not black and white. Do you know what I'm saying? There's like there's a scale of procrastination. We all procrastinate, and that's okay. It's whether or not you're a functional procrastinator versus a dysfunctional procrastinator. And okay, does that, you know, do you know what I mean by that?
What I mean? Want you to dig in a little bit.
No, because we all, I know we're here to talk about teens, but procrastination is probably something that we all feel from time to time, adults.
Absolutely.
And what I mean by being dysfunctional is functional. Like I personally know I actually have an article due and I know when that due date is. It's somewhere on my time horizon. But in the last week, I've kind of been kicking that can down the road a little bit, to be honest, because I have other things. I'm really not in the mood. That's a big one we're going to talk about to write it. But yet I have a sense of knowing how long it's going to take me, and it will get done when it's supposed to. I'm just not, but it keeps moving from the top of my list to the bottom, and I keep doing other things. That's kind of what I would call someone being functional. Like I am procrastinating, but I'm functioning because it's still somewhere in my thought process. It's still somewhere on my time horizon. I might have to stay up super late the night before. I might just get it in just at that deadline, but I'll make it work. But a dysfunctional procrastinator is someone, an adult or teen, who doesn't see what they have going on really in their time horizon, or they just completely drop the ball. Even if they do see it, they just can't get it done. They know they have homework due tomorrow. They know they have a report for work due tomorrow, and tomorrow comes and goes. So there's a, you know, so what we have to, when we look at procrastination, we have to realize that it's really a continuum. Because what I hear from parents all the time is, I want my child to have started on their paper or their assignment earlier. And my question back is, did they get it done? Did they get it done properly? And did they get it done without stressing themselves out? They might not have done it on your clock and calendar, but if they did it on theirs and it was okay, then they're not really a dysfunctional procrastinator. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And that piece of not getting it done on a parent's timeline is, I think that's huge. That's one of the things that my husband and I struggled with one of our daughters. Mm-hmm. Is into her 20s, into college and yes, beyond. You know, we're sitting here and it wasn't until she was probably a junior in college when I like had that light bulb moment of, she's just not doing it in the time frame that I would do it, but she gets it done. But here's a little thing I'd like you to talk about, you know, maybe a little bit more about that, but also in terms of when they get some things done and not others. And what an example of that would be, all the school assignments get done. She would get to her jobs on time. She would do the work there. It's more of those soft things, like things that we want done. You know, she might not actually get the chores done or
exactly,
something like that. How does that all play into it?
So there's two things that play in there. So what you're describing, number one, could very well be what we call mood-based procrastination. And here's how I describe it for parents. And I want you to envision a road that you walk down. And when you get to the road, you can go right or go left. Right is where the things that you don't really want to do live. But more importantly, there's no immediate deadline to get them done, right? So You got to remember what you're saying and what you just described are two very different things. And it's interesting because months back we had the time management podcast and I mentioned what's called what's on your time horizon. So if you have a student that can get their work done for the next day, or you have a student that gets up in the morning to get to class on time or school on time, or you have a student at home that gets to their job on time, it's because there are deadlines. It's because those responsibilities, for lack of a better word, are in their time horizon, all right? They can see them, and therefore they might activate to do them. But if there is no immediate need or immediate time deadline on them, like getting chores done or even college applications if they're too far away, all right, we're going to talk small and big, then them getting up to do them is much, much harder. It just is, because that part of the brain does not see it as immediate. But getting back to my other description, the right, if you went right, that's where those things would live. Going left is our happy, pretty, rainbows and unicorns, and that's where the things we love to do live. And what we're seeing more and more in the world of procrastination is that we feel that we need to be in a better mood to get done the things that we don't want to do. And it's actually called mood repair. And what that means is we might say, oh, there's things that I want to do, but I'm really not in the mood yet to do them. So let me go check Bloomingdale's first, or let me go on Facebook. Sorry, that's mine. Let's go to Facebook or Pinterest, or let me go play basketball outside. Doesn't have to be. Or let me go even walk my dog, or let me call my sister. Something that you think is going to put you in a better mood. And once you say to yourself, I'll be in a better mood, then I can turn and do the things I don't want to do. But let's be honest, what do you think happens?
Distraction.
Distraction happens, or we never get to what we want to do or what we have to do. The thing that we're doing to put ourselves in a better mood takes over, and we never really get to feeling like doing what we have to do. Those are for those that are really procrastinators. I can do that. I can go on Facebook for 15 minutes before I have to write something or make that call I don't want to do. But that's what happens to our students in particular. They say, I'm not in the mood. They turn left and they end up kind of living there and never getting back. And unfortunately, it makes the situation worse, because not only did they not do what they were supposed to do, they're now possibly staring down the wrath of a parent or a teacher, and they haven't accomplished what they said, what they were supposed to. So it starts to build up.
So this brings two things come to mind as you're talking here. And the first one is how does that impact a child emotionally, especially when you're talking teen and young adult? These are the kids that know what they're supposed to be doing, quote unquote, got distracted, and then they are like, it's self-deprecating.
Yes.
Right? How does that play out in their lives emotionally?
I think it is very harmful, because, well, here's the interesting thing. What you said is that they don't do what they know they're supposed to do. There's a great expression that I say all the time is, your child knows what they need to do, but they can't always do what they need to do. Do you know what I mean? They know what to do, but they don't know how to do it. So that's a big thing. Like that, yes, somewhere in their brain, they know they have to, but they just can't get to it. The thing that really I find when I work with both parents and students, it's the arguing, it's the fighting. And there's actually that really become very demoralizing for a child and almost makes them feel worse about what has happened. So I have a few things. Believe it or not, there's research out there that actually says that if you turn the tables and actually forgive yourself or your child, they are more likely to activate the next time and not procrastinate. All that yelling, all that screaming, all that, I can't curse, but you know what I'm saying. All that, you know what, that's happening, that dialoguing is only making the matter worse. That if you actually turn the table around and forgive yourself, if you're the one who's procrastinating or your child, the research actually shows that that child or that student is more apt to initiate the next time, because they do learn from what happened.
So what does that look like? If we're talking to our kid, so they missed something important, an important deadline of whatever kind, work, school, right, home, whatever. What might that conversation look like? What could we say to them that is forgiving? Because right, I can just see some parents going, oh my gosh, but then I'm condoning it and I'm saying that what they did is okay. And so I think we might need some words.
Sure. Yeah. There's a couple of words. And there's not only is there words after the fact, there's words before the fact. Because you need to set up your child to make sure that you're creating an environment for them where they don't necessarily always have to procrastinate. We can talk about that in a minute. But I think what has to be said to your child is not that you're giving them a complete pass, but you need to ask, I always ask this question, what do you think got in your way?
Oh, I like that.
And that's actually a question that I love a parent to ask before. If you know that your student over the weekend has to like write their paper because it's due Monday, that's a great question to ask on Friday. Most parents will ask the question, when are you going to get it done? Because that we all ask. But right, none of us really ask, what do you think might get in your way?
Mm-hmm.
And how then can we avoid that happening? Do you need to leave the house? Do we need to take you like, you know, somewhere else? Do we need to shut everything down? Should we have a quiet hour in the house where everybody's working? So you have that body doubling. So it's not always about what we say after, it's also how we're setting each other up beforehand. But the biggest question I always want parents to ask after the fact is, can you tell me what got in your way? It's not demoralizing. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
not. Because trust me, they feel bad enough. You don't need to pile on.
Exactly.
You don't. But some of you listening might say, no, my kid doesn't feel bad. That's a whole other kid and that's a whole other podcast. It is, right? But I'm talking about your kid that's like, okay, I didn't see that one coming. All right, what do you think got in your way? And you'd be surprised that they actually do know what gets in your way. The other thing is, you have the right as the parent, and this is my feeling, is you set the parameter and it's up to your child to negotiate it. That's always my mantra. Always my mantra. I just was interviewed half hour ago and I said the same thing in that situation. It's up to you. So now you have ammunition. I'm all about the epic fail, because I think without the epic fail, you don't have ammunition to go back to your student and say, remember the last time I left it up to you to figure that out? And remember what happened? Maybe now we can, you know, put some of my, you know, my advice in place, or my, you know, what I, you know, my structure in place. Here's what I'm thinking. What do you feel about that? You maybe.
What I love so much about that, Leslie, is that especially with our teens that are in that developmental stage where they want to have, you know, cut the strings to mom and dad, and they want their own autonomy to make their own decisions. And I see this a lot with that 18-year-old who went off to college for the freshman year and is home for the summer. And setting those boundaries and then negotiating seems like a really powerful way, not only to help your child get those skills they need to move through some of the challenges they may be facing, but it also helps them see that you are looking at them and giving them more responsibility and seeing them for their strengths and what they can do. And then it just becomes this, as opposed to a fight, it actually becomes an empowerment tool.
100%.
Okay.
The other thing too is, and what we never seem to ask, I feel, is, you know, you're going to think living in my house was funny, but my kids will tell you that everything in our house was a teaching moment, good or bad. Okay. I'm honest. And we used to say, like, it's not what you do, it's how you clean it up.
Love that.
Yeah, right? It's not what you do. I'm all about that. We all screw up. All of us. Me too. Oh my God. I'm the biggest screwer upper.
Yeah.
And it was not just for my kids. It was for me too. You can screw up. You can make mistakes. It happens. I can tell you a story about my kid that would blow your mind, but I don't want to do that to him on public right now. But it wasn't about the fact that you made a mistake. It wasn't the fact that you dropped the ball. It wasn't about the fact that you missed something. How'd you clean it up? So that could be a question you're going to ask your student after the fact. All right, I see you missed you were supposed to hand that paper in on Monday. It didn't make it in. What's your plan? How are you going to clean it up? And if you don't know, do you want some help figuring it out? Because the kid might not even know. He might be paralyzed with fear. Oh my God, what do I do next? But you're giving them an opportunity to right a wrong. And that's something that I think is the life skill that they so desperately need to learn. So you might have to go show your face in front of your teacher or professor on Monday morning and say, you know what? I didn't get it done. Here's X, Y, and Z reason why. Is there a chance for me to hand it in tomorrow? Is it a chance for, you know what? We don't need to get that granular, but you know what I'm saying. Now you're putting in you're now instilling in your child how to prioritize his time, how to be a critical thinker, how to solve a problem. I mean, these are just amazing skills. So making mistakes are really okay. Now, how is your child going to clean it up?
Well, and the awesome thing about that, Leslie, is, you know, you said these are life skills. And as you were talking, I was seeing those words and those comments going so far beyond turning in an assignment or making it to practice on time or to work on time or whatever. It was what I heard was helping our kids become the good people we want them to be.
Exactly.
Because we can have all kinds of messes in our lives. You know, we're talking about these things. Well, you get in a car accident.
Right.
Well, how are you going to clean that up?
How are you
going to do about it? You know, it's the same.
It is exactly the same. But what I want to make sure everybody hears me say, though, as well, is your child, you know, I all of what we talk about, I know a couple months ago we discussed time management, we're talking about procrastination, all of these are brain-based behaviors. I know I always bring it back to that, but I'm not going to go into all of that now, but what I mean by that is that you have to remember that if your child has major procrastination issues, he might have a weak, his brain is weak. And we have to, so he might, so think of it as the equivalent to lifting a 2-pound weight. That might be all he's capable of doing. To be able to meet deadline, to be able to forward think of when I'm going to get something done is the equivalent to lifting an 8-pound weight. You know what I mean? You've got to have strength in that brain. So there are definitely things that I think as a parent that you can do to set your child up to strengthen that brain, to try to minimize the procrastination before it gets. We discuss what happens after. There are actually things that you can do with your student like beforehand. So how do you get, and one of my biggest things that I try to teach is that what I see in most kids is getting started is the hardest, right? Once they're in it, they're usually in it. It's and adults too. Like once a kid starts writing, they're like, shh, I'm writing. I'm in the middle of something. Get out of my room. Right? I see that all the time. I'll pop my head in occasionally when my son was younger. You want something? Shh, I'm working. But it was getting him to get into that chair. That was the procrastination, not once he was in it.
Oh, for goodness sake, I told Judy that this morning. You know, I'm like, okay, I haven't really wanted to go to work and start work this week. But once I started, I'm like, I'm really loving it.
Right,
but
you're in it.
Yeah, it still didn't make it easy to, you know, not do the laundry or put down the newspaper or whatever I was doing first thing in the morning to actually start the work, especially when you're working from a home office. So like you said, it's not just our kids. So that can give us a little empathy there. But how do we help them get started?
So I always say you've got to lower the bar. You've got to make that barrier to entry as non-existent as possible. So you want to start, you want to have them start, particularly if you have somebody, you know, particularly if you have a student at home who is a real procrastinator. You want them to start and make it as simple as possible. Because I think where the procrastination sets in a lot with all of us, not even our students, is when we haven't even started yet and we're focused on the finish line.
Oh my gosh, you are so right on there.
Right? And that paralyzes us because we're now thinking about finishing and we haven't even started. So I do two things with students. Number one, I start them with something as simple. It could be one math problem or, you know, one sentence, just one. Just what you need to do to get started. Remember, we're talking about getting started. And then once they get started, it's one math problem, maybe, you know, one sentence to write, one vocabulary word, just one. And usually what happens when you do that is they keep on going. The other thing that I love to do is that I like to separate out the actual task from the setup.
What does that mean?
Okay, and this could even be something for an adult. So you might have a parent listening, and let's say they want to change the way they eat, and they want to start creating healthy meals, and they want to I'm going paleo, you know, the whole, but that is overwhelming, and they are stuck in paralysis because the thought of doing all of that is so overwhelming. So we are going to separate the setup from the actual task. The setup for them might look like, I'm just going to go food shopping. You're setting it up. You're not creating the meals. You're not looking at recipes. You're just making your fridge like healthy. So you're going to do the food shopping. Now, all of a sudden, you can open your fridge and realize I'm prepared now to go on that journey of healthy eating because I have the tools, i.e. the food, to do what I need. For a student, that could look at, all right, I'm just going to focus on getting my, you know, my sources in place. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to look at the whole assignment. I'm just going to look at what is the setup for me to be able to sit down and do it. So I'm going to make sure I have my 5 sources around me. I'm going to make sure I'm in a well-lit room. I'm going to make sure I have my favorite drink. I'm going to make sure that I have everything I need first. That's the only thing I'm going to focus on is the setup. Can I tell you, it's a really, really interesting way to look at things. We do it even with organizing projects. We don't want you to go organize your closet. We want to make sure you have extra hangers, baskets for donation, bags for the tailor. Do you see what I'm doing there? Mm-hmm. I'm setting you up. We're not talking about starting, but now that I've set you up, isn't starting that much easier?
It is, and depending what it is, yes. You know, I can actually get a little excited about doing it now. You know, exactly. As you're doing those things, even just thinking about it, I could feel myself shift gears.
Exactly.
And get into it. And I remember as my kids were doing papers, I would hear them do the same thing, or, you know, they would say, oh, I can't work on this paper. And I'd be like, well, are you actually writing it yet? No. So I would kind of do the same thing, not knowing what I was doing, but saying, well, you know, just get your stuff together. You know, get your cards, get your research, or you don't feel like you can write right now. Fine. Just do your research and jot down some notes. That's
exactly. Easy. Or tape yourself. We do that a lot with students. If you can't write right now, let's just have you speak into, you know, a video recording device and just get your, because that's a bigger issue. That's a big thing too. We're talking very granular now about procrastinating on writing. There's kids that procrastinate on everything, but I see that. I remember I had a student I was working with who was writing his college essay and he could not get started. And I understand the weight of that. And I just took out like my phone and I said, just tell me what you want to say. And within 10 minutes, he had an essay because mm-hmm. he could speak what he wanted to do, but he couldn't write what he wanted.
So Leslie, I have a question. I want to kind of backtrack here for a second because sure. I'm listening and I'm going, this is awesome. These are great ways to help our kids build that strength, you know, that brain strength we're talking about. But then I go on the flip side, what about that person that takes too much time in the setup rather than the execution? And they are all about, let's organize the piles and get this over here and I'm all set to do it, and the execution falls apart.
That's a really good question. And again, that I have a lot of different answers for that, but again, it's going to depend on the person. It's going to depend if it's an adult sometimes versus a student. It's going to depend. And there's a lot of things that you can do. Some answer is as easy as some people say working with a timer really helps them because it kind of puts a time frame on what they're doing so that they're not the ones who have to come up with it on their own. They have something else. We call that in my world an external communicator. Mm-hmm. So it takes the motivation piece out of you and it puts it somewhere else that you're not responsible for. So you're more apt to listen to it. I know that's weird psycho babble stuff, mm-hmm. but it actually really works. Did that make sense to you?
Yeah, it did. You know, it's just that thing of so often, and I see it in myself and other parents and kids, it's we spend so much time organizing to do what we need to do that we never get to do what we do.
Right. So it depends on it. So with a student, my answer would be different than with an adult. So I'll just talk about students. For me, particularly with a student, is if I can break down for them all the steps that are involved in a way that makes much sense to them. So for example, we're all big, you know, let's say the project was you wanted your child to help you clean out the backyard, you know, get it ready for the season. I'm going to pick something that's not school related because I think it's not always about school. And if your child does not have those specific steps that they can really understand. So instead of just saying to them, all right, well, why don't you go help me like clean up the backyard and go get everything set up. To some degree, they might not even know where the setup ends mm-hmm. and the starting begins. So I like to make sure with a student like that, I'll teach a parent, I want you not to just tell them to go work in the backyard. I want you to break down every single step so that they are very clear, not only with what they have to do, but how to move to the next one. So that's where we do see the setup, students in particular, not getting stuck on a setup because they've been given very specific instructions. It could be something as simple, you know, as bring all the garbage, bring the garbage pails, you know, to the garage, you know, get all the old plants and put, you know, I don't know. I don't want to get into the weeds literally, but you see what I'm saying? But so if they can go through directions and realize that they've moved on from setup, we tend to see them move as opposed to get stuck on that. When it comes to an adult and maybe organizing, that's a little bit harder, believe it or not. That's when we say sometimes you need to call in the troops. You might need a body double, a friend to be there with you to help you kind of move on. Some people will set that timer, also will allow them, not a timer to know when you're finished setting up, but setting up a timer to say, okay, now it's time for you to move to the next task.
Got it.
That's a really good one, is using that timer to initiate as opposed to stopping you.
That's great. I love that.
And in there, Leslie, so you told us, you know, one of the mistakes we make as parents is just giving our kids this big overarching, you know, go work in the yard, or right, go clean the bathroom,
right, or go clean your room,
get your college applications in, or go look for a summer job, or whatever it is. What are some of the other mistakes that we tend to make as parents that actually make it harder for our kids to not procrastinate?
So we don't talk a lot about this, and there's a ton of research is how I tell parents, if you can create your child's, now I know some parents are out there going, do I really need to be doing all this to get my kid to do things? I know that I get that a lot. And I'm going to say, yes, if your child has real procrastination issues, remember guys, this is brain based. Okay. So you are needing to work on strengthening that part of the brain for your child. So yes, you do have to do certain things. And one of them, which is one of my favorites, is creating their happy place. So I don't mean happy place where they don't have to do what they want to do. So none of you say that in the show notes. Okay. What I mean by that is I really believe that we need to create positive energy around our tasks to get motivated. So you just said you came back from vacation and you don't want, but I know that I feel that way a lot. And as an adult, if I have to sit down and do something that I don't really want to do, I want my favorite iced tea, or I want to put my music on, or I want to be in my office, which is painted orange because orange makes me happy and I want to go in there. Mm-hmm. It is the same for your child. It is actually worse for your child because your child's brain is weaker than yours. So if your daughter is having trouble, let's say getting started on their homework, and you can paint their room like a really fun color and create a study nook that will speak volumes to them and say, come here and do your homework. They are more likely to do that if they're sitting in a room that doesn't create happiness for them. I have a kid that only will do their homework if they're eating popcorn, because popcorn is his favorite thing in the world. So if you can create an environment, the environment will actually do some of the work for you. Motivation, or doesn't, you know, which is the opposite of procrastination, mm-hmm, doesn't always have to come from you. We mm-hmm have external communicators that communicate to us, it's time to get things done. It could be your environment. It could be food, you know, your favorite food while you do something. It's music. I have an adult client who, when she walks into her office, she puts on the show tape Hamilton, and three and a half hours later, she's ready for lunch.
Interesting.
Wait, it gets better. I have another one, right? Now I'm talking, this is interesting. We're now talking about adults, but music is a great tool, because what starts to happen is we equate hearing the music with getting work done. She mm-hmm only listens to Hamilton only in the mornings and only at work. I have another client that literally, this was years ago, that had pictures of George Clooney, we can all chuckle, mm-hmm, all over her office, because seeing George Clooney was a motivator and made her happy. She wanted to be in that space.
So those external cues become critical. Exactly. In not only for ourselves, but for our kids, and just opening up those conversations with them and say, okay, what is the thing that brings you joy that we could put in your room or
in your space.
In your space,
doesn't
right
have to be your room.
Gotcha. Right. Gotcha. So okay,
I'm gonna give one of mine. There's something, I don't want to say what it is. There's something I have to do in my business, you know, a lot. And every time that I have to do this project, I go out, okay, and I buy myself new pens. I love pens. I am very territorial about my pens. Okay, because pens make me happy. I'm very tactile. I like pretty paper. I like cute files. I like colored pens. If I don't have those around me, I cannot motivate to get my work done. That is my environment. I don't need music. Music actually for me is distracting. I need the pen, the paper, and I can't tell you when I talk about this, usually people are flooding in with, oh my God, me too. I didn't even realize that. You're right. I can't get going without that pen. So those are all external communicators. It's creating an environment that has motivating enthusiasm around it.
Oh my gosh. So valuable. So valuable.
All right. And then I have one other thing that is a really good parent tool for a student. That's just verbiage. That's just verbiage. So verbiage is easy because it doesn't cost us anything and it's immediate. I get it. Trust me. Trust me. I get it. There's something we always call, future travel. And it's trying to get your child, and this is totally where we're working on strengthening the brain. We want our children, when they're about to procrastinate, to do some time awareness or future traveling. We want them to picture themselves in a place 2 hours from now, 5 hours from now, or even 4 days from now when they're turning in that paper. How good will you feel 4 days from now when you get to hand in that paper on time? Or how good will you feel waking up Saturday morning knowing you can go into the, oh, you can see I live in outside of Manhattan, that you can go into the city with Jane and spend the day because you worked on your paper now. How good will you feel? Or conversely, how are you going to feel 2 hours from now that you wasted those 2 hours when you had to, and you have to leave for dance class and you could have gotten your homework done and now you won't be able to watch, pick a show, Billions, I don't know, just picking a show. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
It's not condescending. You're not saying you need to go in your room right now and get that done. You're putting your child in that space to try to picture themselves and how they're, because when we do that a lot, we're transferring that skill to our students. We're having them strengthen their brain, but we're hopefully transferring that skill that they start doing it on their own, that they're about to procrastinate and they say to themselves, how am I going to feel a couple of hours from now when I've wasted that time and I really wanted to go to Jane's house to watch The Bachelor?
And again, you're back to that life skill and you're back to letting them make that mistake and experience that feeling and know how crummy it is and miss out on the thing or get the bad grade or miss out on the job or whatever it is. It's that life skill. And as parents, again, a mistake that we make, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but a couple of mistakes I see is one, we literally stand there and try to badger our kids into doing what we think they should do on the time frame that we think it should be done. And then on top of it, we cushion them from the consequences of it not getting done appropriately or in the right time frame.
100%. I think you have to also, though, be very clear on what it is that your child has a hard time on. And you were very crystal clear when you said, my child able to activate when something is in their time horizon immediately. They know how to get up in the morning to go to school. They know how to get their, we call them one-offs when something's due tomorrow. That's considered a one-off. These are just expressions in my world. They know how to get a one-off done. They know how to get to work on time. But the softer things where they're not immediate, where there's not a deadline looming, so that... Knowing that about your child, then what you're able to do is put the proper system and structure in place to be able to strengthen their brain when it comes to those types of, you know, circumstances.
Yeah. So
having clear expectations, you know what I mean? Instead of just saying, go clean up your room, it's here's a list of the things in your room that need to be done. Like books on the shelf, Legos in the bin, I'm just making this stuff up, clothes in the laundry basket, and it needs to be done by Monday night because perhaps your housekeeper is coming on Tuesday morning and you want it done. Does this make sense to you? Do you understand what I am asking of you?
Oh, there's one.
Hello.
That's a great question.
I ask that all the time. Do you understand what is being asked of you?
I'm writing.
and how many times will they say sort of? I mean, I can just see it.
Right.
I kind of do. And if we don't ask that question, we make the assumption that they understand, and therefore our reaction is very different than if we realize they didn't.
So I'm going to throw all of us as parents, including me, so I'm not above anybody here, under the bus and say that I was the worst at what I call don't forget and oh, by the ways.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, and we talked about, so I'm gonna just interject and say, listening to this conversation, if anyone has not heard Leslie's first interview, you need to listen. It was episode 21. It was released on June 12th of 2018. And the reason I'm saying that is these two conversations go so hand in hand. Yeah. And listening to and understanding both of them can make just an incredible difference, not just in our quote unquote child's performance, you could think of it, but our relationship, our happiness, their happiness.
Yes.
It spreads so far. And Liz, I'm going to let you quick say what you wanted to say,
but
then I'm
going to
go back and wrap us up.
It's all about keeping the tenor. You know what I mean? The whole, like, what's the tenor in your house? But it goes back to the thing as parents, when we say, oh, by the way, or don't forget, and we're just very nonchalant and say, oh, don't forget to do da-da-da-da-da, and we're not putting the proper support around them so that they can actually remember how to do or to do what we want them to do. And I want to say one more thing before we wrap this up, because this is really an important thing, and this should have been the first thing we discussed, my fault, is you have to play I spy with your student. And I love that I feel you already have when you gave that example at the beginning. Procrastination is what everybody talks about, but it isn't always procrastination. You've got to peel back that onion, because perhaps it might look like procrastination, but perhaps it's really an organizing issue. Your child might not have written down their homework. They might not be able to find their homework. They might not know what the heck they have to do, and they're spending hours and hours trying to figure it out, and they finally say, you know what, I'm done, put a fork in me. Is that a procrastination issue, or is that an organizational issue? Do you see? I mean, I could go on and give 40 different, I know we don't have time, but that's a great example of you need to get to the root before we can put a Band-Aid on it. So I would not be band-aiding procrastination on that one. I would be band-aiding organization.
So if you see your kid procrastinating, it's a cue to dig deeper to find out exactly what's going on. And then if it is procrastination, build those muscles. If it's not, address those things.
Exactly.
And don't mix them up. Okay.
Okay, so we're going to do a quick summary here. And we start out by saying, you know, procrastination happens to all of us, but there is a scale of it. And at the two ends of the scale, Leslie, you said we have functional versus dysfunctional procrastination.
Yes.
And essentially in the functional, we get our stuff done. It's in our thoughts. It's in our time horizon. As you said, we keep kicking the can down the road, but we're aware that we're kicking the can.
Right.
And we know, we kind of can see where we're kicking it, but we're kicking it to a spot where we're going, well, I can get it done there. I might have to stay up late. I'll get it done. In dysfunctional procrastination, it isn't in a time frame. It isn't something that we can see in our time horizon, and things don't necessarily get done. Mm-hmm. And one way to identify that is to ask three things to figure out whether your child's procrastination is functional or dysfunctional. Is because, you know, it doesn't have to be on our time frame. So the questions are, did it get done? Did it get done properly? And did it get it done without getting them unreasonably stressed out?
Exactly.
And then there are things that happen that we can do. So one of the things that happens is our mood-based procrastination, where you said that these are things that we don't want to do, we don't like to do, so we think we have to be in the mood to do it. And we tend to push those things off. We do things to put us in the mood, and it just never gets done. As parents, we can kind of help our kids with that by helping them to create environments that work well for what they need to do. We can help them out by creating their happy place, which is that environment, that positive shift in energy. We can point out and have them talk through this future travel. How will you feel? How good will it feel when you, and you fill in the blank, you know, get this done, turn this in, got it done early, so now you can do the cool thing. Or how will you feel when you can't do the cool thing because you didn't get it done? Or how do you feel when you don't turn it in, when you don't make the cut, when this thing doesn't happen? And that's it, future travel thing. We can help our kids by breaking things down into steps with a clear discussion of when they're switching from the setting up to the doing, which was, again, another way of easing them into things. If they're having trouble getting started on a task, you said that we can help, you know, have them suggest that they set things up, get things ready, get the cool drink, get the good pens, get the music they need, get their stuff around them that they need to do the thing they need to do. Some questions that you have given us to help walk our kids through not just doing things, but strengthening the brain and learning to do it themselves is three pieces. What's your plan, which also ties into the time management interview, but what's your plan, what could get in your way, and what can you do to avoid that happening? And we're doing all of this for a lot of reasons. We're doing this to help our kids build life skills, but also because these types of issues, they're harmful emotionally to our kids. It damages their emotions, their self-esteem, and it damages their happiness and their future success. So, Leslie, we really appreciate this. Obviously, again, there's so much more we want to do. So for anyone who's listening, who's going, I need more from Leslie, where do they go?
Okay, easy shopping, one stop. Go to, we try to make it easy. We don't want, the name of my company is Order Out of Chaos. The website is orderookaos.com, and from there, there's a million launching off points. We have another product website. You can find us, all our social media contacts. There's resources, podcasts, audios, interviews, videos, and just go there and hang out there. And I think anyone who wants it, I think you'll find a lot of really, really great stuff there.
And you definitely want to follow them on their Facebook page. I have been following since our first episode 21, and let me tell you, I'm getting nuggets regularly. It's a fantastic Facebook page. And thank you so much, Leslie, for being here with us today. If this is your first time listening, welcome. And we have a year coming up that will be one to remember, and invite you to go to mightyparenting.com to see all that we have to support you. Remember, you are a mighty parent. And this is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler. Until next week.